Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. It's a minute past the hour on this, the 10th day of November, 2015. Not the 10th day of May, but the 10th day of November, 2015. And this is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to hop into the chat room where we're having big fun. Yes, indeed. Jeremy in Vermont there in the chat room letting me know loud and clear on TuneIn. Thank you very kindly, Jeremy. And I'm still waiting word back from the fine folks at Stitcher as to what possibly could have gone sideways there. And hopefully I will at some point in time. Good evening to everyone in the chat room. You can be there too. It's as easy as going to headonradionetwork.com/chatroom and picking yourself out a screen name and a password and just bebopping right on in. Good evening to Anatole, Jeremy, Little Gray. Good evening, Texas T and Will in Chicago, all capably moderated by longtime indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space this evening to become Manny Day. Texas Steve popping in. Good evening. And, well, like I said, you can be there too. This is, of course, a listener supported effort. We rely on you and only you to help keep this all going. Your help is always needed, and well, this evening, for instance, well, we closed the evening thanks to Carol Baker. We closed the evening last night only down $170, and overnight, thank you very kindly, Joyce, for signing up to be a part of the 400 Club. No, thank you for signing up for a subscription, and we're encouraging as many people as possible to do so. We're looking for 400 people to subscribe at $10 a piece. And, you know, we're getting there. One, two, three, four, five people at a time. We're getting there. And everybody who does sign up will get one of the two new Horn bumper stickers, courtesy of our buddy Scott. Either they want it all or a Horn bumper sticker with the Horn logo. That's, you know, it's real easy. Just head on radionetwork.com, the contribute tab. You click the little spot that says 10 bucks, and you can make this a recurring contribution. Okie dokie. Urban Prospector wandering into the room now. Good evening. Bike Gata in the room. Good to see you. So, looking for 400 at 10. And that would mean I could do every program without ever mentioning fundraising again. But as it stands this evening, thanks to an anonymous contribution that rolled in as well, we begin the evening only $60 down, so that means we've got a $260 fundraising goal for this evening. And remember, everybody, ixnay on the une, ouye, ouhe word, and that's good for $20 from Carol Baker this evening. We're going to try to go 4 days with no mention of, right. So, just remember, ixnay on the, let's see if we can do this. And, you know, it's just like any 12-step program. We don't have to do this forever. We just have to do this. We just have to do it tonight. And just one day at a time. please. So that brings us, of course, to the fact that this is Titanic Tuesday. And that, of course, was named for something that happened on right-wing radio here in America's fifth smallest radio market, you know, Beckley, when a few years back, one of America's most underappreciated monotones took a call, something like, "Steve, how come it is that there's seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? We ain't went nowhere near the ocean." To which he blithely and confidently answered, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." Mm-hmm. Yep. No word yet on the movement of the Titanic popover tins. No. No. So that's we celebrate confident right-wing idiocy on Tuesdays. And it works nicely because it just sort of follows naturally in the wake of Moran Monday. But the thing is, there's always new every day, and we don't have a lot of day-old goods around here. Oh, and that's it. Thank you very kindly. I just got a note from Darlene. Darlene has said to help toward knocking out that 260. She's going to put a $100 challenge on the table. She will match the first $100 that comes in. 10 at 10, 5 at 20, 2 at 50, 20 at 5, new subscribers, however it happens. That'd be great. 10 new subscribers at 10 bucks a piece, yeah. But if $100 comes in, Darlene will kindly double it. Thank you very, very much, Darlene. It is much appreciated. Hopefully that'll happen quickly. Mm-hmm. So, it's Titanic Tuesday. And, you know, sometimes with Titanic Tuesday, we always like to have as much fun as we possibly can have on this program. But sometimes things get serious. A pair of stories that kind of dovetail, at least in my mind. One being, some survey data that's out. The McClatchy Journalism Organization and Marist University, working together, released a poll today. And I find this poll most interesting in light of the fact that it reflects it. Once again, we're out there, the Horn Family Commune congregation is so out there, so far out there ahead of the curve. We feel like we're on straight road. It was last week when we were discussing the fact that, there's nowhere safe in the United States anymore. You're not safe from the NRA. There, nowhere. Not church, not school, not work, not your own home, not the grocery store, not the Jiffy Lube, pizza parlor, nowhere. Nowhere is safe anymore from the inherent dangers posed to peaceful, orderly society by the National Rifle Association and its not too well hung together, glued together adherents. And everybody participates in the lottery, whether we want to or not. Well, there it is, polling data released today from McClatchy Marist. 63% of Americans surveyed said that they are more worried about being a victim of gun violence in the United States than being a victim of terrorism. Well, that shows that the 63% of respondents actually have their priorities in order, because you're probably more likely to be struck by lightning or win the lottery than you are to be killed by terrorists in the United States, if we define terrorists as people from somewhere else who... You're like brown, you know, Muslims, right? Now, on the other hand, you've got a distinct a distinctly higher likelihood of being taken out by a right-wing terrorist, a domestic, homegrown, Merkin terrorist. And, of course, there's some gray area here as to what constitutes a terrorist. I mean, obviously, if the person is hollering Allah Akbar while squeezing off a few rounds, I think most of America, yep, that's terrorist, damn it. I mean, that's a very definite. On the other hand, if somebody just wastes a movie theater because they've got a collection of Second Amendment freedom protectors and the fillings in their teeth started transmitting messages to them from some dog somewhere saying, kill the moviegoers. Well, is that terrorism? Maybe we don't know. If the shooter were to happen to be African-American, clearly that would be a thug terrorist. But insofar as most of the people who are doing most of the shooting up of public spaces and most of the slaughter, most of the mayhem, are disaffected, dissatisfied, white young males, youngish at least, well, it gets a little gray now, doesn't it? See what I did there? A little gray? Hi, in the chat room. But no, 63% of Americans say they fear someone they know would die as a result of gun violence. 29% generally say they consider the possibility of a terrorist attack a greater fear. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we're going to hear anything about gun violence in this evening's Republican entertainment. This orgy of teabaggery, this pageant. Oh, there's only going to be eight people screaming at each other on the stage and hooting about what the voices in their the fillings in their teeth are telling with the voices in their right. Only eight. Now, Carly Fiorina will be one of them. Sadly, Chris Christie will not. Because they changed the rules for this one. In order to be on the main stage and not at the kiddie table, you had to get at least you had to be polling at least 2.5%. And what a low bar that really is. The next step down is, do you have a pulse? But you had to be getting at least 2.5% in an average of four national polls. So, somehow or another, miraculously, Jebya has managed to stay on the stage one more time. Of course, Rick Santorum will not be. Piyush Jindal will not be. And much to my chagrin, Lindsey Graham will not be either. No, it's a crime. Mm-hmm. So, what you have, but I think our friends at FYI Nation are going to be doing something special with that. It won't start for a little while, I don't think. It's being hosted, of course, by Fox Business Channel and the Wall Street Journal, which means that I don't know at what point in the program the brown acid will have kicked in, but I'm sure that it will, and there will be no substance. I mean, if you watch the MSNBC discussion forum that happened last week, moderated by Rachel Maddow, yeah, it's not going to be that. There will, of course, not be any substantial debate of anything that actually matters in Merca. Instead, I fully expect mumbling Ben Carson to break out with his new hit, I Bless the Grains Down in Africa. Sorry, couldn't resist. There's going to be a lot. It's going to be hot in hell, you know. But at least there won't be any evangelical fundamentalists there, so maybe we can enjoy a hot cup of coffee in peace. Yeah, coffee breaks over. Back on your head. Mm-hmm. So that's coming up. But anyway, Americans, to the tune of 63%, and I'd say that's significant, to the tune of 63%, Americans say, yeah, I'm afraid that I'm going to just go down to the go down to the Rippy Mart some evening for a six pack of not your father's root beer, and there'll be some freedom protector down there who'll blow me or somebody I love away because they don't like the cut of our jib, or maybe because I'm drinking that sissy beer. I don't know. Sissy beer is Michelob Ultra. Actually, the term for that, as I recently learned, Michelob Ultra is cheerleader beer. Go figure. Not responsible for it, but I laughed. I had to laugh. I would entertain a debate on whether Michelob Ultra is even beer at all. But no, 63%. Because 63% of the people in this country have figured out that this has become an unnecessarily dangerous place. And see, those 63%, they're not necessarily all worried about being shot by some wild-eyed freedom protector. Some of them, because, I fall generally into that. You know, I'm afraid that some God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christian freedom protector is just going to reach back for his wallet there in the line at Wally World and accidentally knock his 8-inch barreled 44 Magnum hog leg out of his custom-made holster thingy, and it's going to land on the ground and just go bang, and somebody will wind up pulling a Gandhi and saying, "Hi, Ram," and, you know, dead. Because that's a component of it, too. Now, here's how it all breaks out. 77% of Democrats surveyed see that the proliferation of gun violence and shootings in this country is more to be feared than terrorism. Republicans, on the other hand, they see it nearer to a pick'em situation. 55% of Republicans are more afraid of being shot by some freedom protector. Well, they're afraid of being shot by a Black Lives Matter person or somebody of color. But 45%, no, they're afraid, that's terrorism. 55% are afraid of terrorists. The other 45% are afraid of being shot by Black Lives Matter. Now, it gets weirder if you're a teabagger, and doesn't it always? If you're a teabagger, 57% are afraid of terrorism, that one of these days they're just going to be cruising down Action Alley in the local Wally World when, you know, something that's all just going to erupt in a staccato burst of fire as ISIS comes pouring in from the frozen foods. Yeah, 57% of teabaggers, 37%, but this is telling. Either generally generic Republicans, 45%, or 37% of baggers, they're more afraid of being freedom protected, which tells us something. I mean, if you take that 77% of the Democrats and you add to that, see, 77% that's 104% of America is afraid of being shot. You know, while you're standing in line there at the Starbucks, you're waiting for somebody to, God damn it, you didn't say Merry Christmas. Die, heretic! Wolverines! Right? Yeah. Meanwhile, a different poll, Washington Post ABC News poll back in October, 46% of people surveyed would like to see some effort to reduce gun violence, and they think it should be a bigger priority over protecting the rights of lawful gun owners. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, 47% say the gun owner's rights are more important than, say, a 7-year-old little girl's right to become an 8-year-old little girl. Etc. So we got that. Well, consider that in this light. According to WTVR, a television station. The FBI has recently completed a sting of sorts, and they have arrested Robert Doyle, Ronald Beasley Cheney. And there's gonna be a True Grit reference in here somewhere. And Charles Halderman. Robert Doyle, Ronald Beasley Cheney, and Charles Halderman were in some stage of planning to give what they refer to as the coming race war a little shot in the arm or the back or wherever it is one has to shoot to get a race war going. They were going to kill a local jewelry store owner. They were going to rob an armored car, and they were going to kill and rob an Oklahoma gun dealer. And then, according to the FBI, they were going to take the money they made in the robberies, and they were going to purchase property and weapons so that they could start training, according to the FBI, for their race war. Now, how are they going to accomplish this? Well, they were going to accomplish this. I tell you, it's going to be tough to get through this night. They were going to accomplish this by attacking black churches and synagogues. Not black does not modify synagogues. It's just black churches and synagogues. The copy I have in front of me says Jewish synagogues, but as quick as I find a Mormon synagogue, I will not consider the word Jewish to be superfluous in that context. But yeah, they were going to shoot up. They were going to get a race war started by shooting up synagogues and black churches. Now, how close did they get? We don't know. All we do know is that the messieurs Doyle, Cheney, and Halderman hatched this plan, if you will. They hatched this plan back in September, and somebody picked up the phone and dropped the dime on them to the Phoebes, who promptly sent in an undercover agent wearing a flannel shirt and a Donald Trump Make America Great Again hat. No, I'm making that part up, but how far from the truth do you think that is? And maybe some Walmart brand Wolverine kind of, hunting boots. Really? No, not really. And who sidled up to him and said, I've been hearing you fellers are the ones that want to get a race war started. Well, I want to jine up with you. I want me some race war, too. A couple more of them Dillon roofs, and I think we can get them going here. I mean, after all, we're going to have all the guns. They ain't got no guns. I mean, they're going to be sitting there in their black churches, sitting there in their synagogues. And we can just come in and waste them. And then we can say, to arms, save America for the white race. And because these three people apparently have the mental capacity of, I don't know, silly putty. No, the silly putty's kind of elastic. No, they're probably dumber than silly putty. The mental acuity of a cold hamburger. How about that? They said, you want John Apple? Sure. Here's our plans. And started talking. No. I need you to talk a little bit more toward this side of me. I mean, yeah, talk right there to my lapel. Talk to my American flag pin. No, hell no, that's not a microphone or nothing. I just want to make sure we's all patriotic about it. And again, this is one of those situations that is like, well, it's like seeing a roach in your kitchen. If you see one, you can bet your bottom dollar that you've got 1,000 of them. was just the Advanced Expeditionary Force that was out there running around in the middle of the floor when you flipped the light on at 3 o'clock in the morning. There are probably, there are people like this all over America. Now, what the lawful gun owners won't tell you is that a whole bunch of them are your lawful gun owners. But they've managed to keep it tamped down enough so far that they're not so many of them running out. But, you know, you don't collect these damn firearms for because you, how many hundred round clips does it take to take down a, say a, well, I don't know, a rabid skunk? You see my point? Sure. Rodney Clark runs a Baptist church near the area where the men were taken into custody. And, by the way, did I note that they are identified as three Virginia white supremacists? Rodney Clark said that he had already taken precautions, security precautions, at his church, even before the bust was announced. Mm-hmm. So it's a shame you can't worship your God in peace. You try to have your focus on Him, but you have to worry about what's coming through the door. I can remember a time when Christian churches looked forward to having people coming through the door because it meant it was another chance to minister to them with the gospel of the saving grace of Christ Jesus. Yes, yes. Well, not so anymore. And frankly, I wouldn't blame anybody in a traditionally African-American church if the next time some white guy comes wandering through, they don't think, we did this once and it didn't work out so well. And maybe having a little metal detector. You know. But then again, that would probably raise the ire of the NRA because freedom. So apparently that 63% of Americans who are afraid that they or someone they know or love will be just kind of shot in the random death lottery in America, I'd say those are probably some of your more grounded people in this country. And it almost goes without saying that of that 63%, some of those must be gun owners. Because, see, there are gun owners out there in the United States who don't feel like they have to strap on and rack one into the chamber and take the safety off just to go down and get a loaf of bread and a jug of milk at the Wiggling Pig. It's a nervous-making country we have here. And while people do, apparently the American people do wish that we could do something to protect people from gun violence and gun negligence and gun recklessness, it does not appear that anything is going to happen anytime soon. Watch this space, as the old saying goes. So that, okay. We got that going on. Oh, thank you. Thank you very kindly to Gary, Laborman, who in one fell swoop met Darlene's challenge. And, if someone else would like to follow up on that, we would pretty much get fundraising taken care of for the evening. Shucks, we might even get a little bit ahead. Who knows? Well, what do you want, Marty? Marty apparently taking issue with my use of the phrase sissy beer. No, it's cheerleader beer. Cheerleader beer. I mean no offense by it. I just thought it was funny. Because there's nothing funny about Michelob Ultra. It's just sad. All right. What else? I want to revisit someone, if we may. Do you recall, and you might want to get the hockey puck for this. Do you recall a fella from last night by the name of Kevin Swanson? Now, he just had him a big confab out there in Iowegia. And last night we heard about the stumbling the children. Well, a lot of people are beginning to pay attention to this clown. Because this is one of the difference between Kevin Swanson's hate and, say, the hate of three white supremacist jerks in Virginia is not much difference at all. Not at all. And, well, by way of proving my point, and by way of getting a few more bite marks in the hockey puck, well, a little more of Kevin Swanson's recent conniption. Because he really is. He's a gift that just keeps on giving. Remember, this is the guy who was has argued in the past for summary execution for people who happen to be homosexual. Mm-hmm. And as usual, these right wingers, these white wingers, as usual, they have very vivid imagination. So if it's the dinner hour, well, sorry. But listen to what this guy just sits around fantasizing about gay people. Yeah. And this is, you know, the Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, thinks this guy's great. So does Pastor Brother Governor Reverend Diabetes Snake Oil Salesman Mike Huckstraby, and so does Piyush Jindal, amateur exorcist. Yeah. There we go.
Sackcloth and ashes. I was thinking, you know, there are parents, and this is not a funny thing, there are families.
This really is Marty McFly's dad. He's flipping out worse than what was that actor's name that played Marty McFly? Crispin Glover. Remember when he flipped out on, what was it, Letterman one night, eons ago? This guy is sort of seizing up all over the podium here. Again, halfway between Crispin Glover and David Byrne's character from iconic video.
Sackcloth and ashes. I was thinking, you know, there are parents, and this is not a funny thing, there are families whose, and we're talking Christian families, pastors' families, elders' families.
I'm saying meth. This guy is so. This guy has got to be tweaking. He's one breath away from just chewing the air gum. My God. Sackcloth and ashes. Remember, that's what we're talking about here. Sackcloth and ashes.
Sackcloth and ashes. I was thinking, you know, there are parents, and this is not a funny thing, there are families whose, and we're talking Christian families, pastors' families, elders' families, in good godly churches, their sons are rebelling, hanging out with homosexuals and getting married, and the parents are invited.
Because that's what happens. You hang out with homosexuals and get married. Now, in my day of being a rebelling youth, I was known to hang out with some homosexuals, but mostly we would just run to the Tennessee state line and back to buy beer. And that's pretty much as far as it went, because we weren't concerned with sexuality nearly as much as we were with the availability of said beer. This is before there was anything like, you know, Michelob Ultra. But anyway, no, that good godly team, and they're hanging out with homosexuals and getting married. Because that's what, you know, hi, I'm Bill, I'm a homosexual. Well, hi, Bill, I'm a good godly upstanding teenager named Ted. Would you like to get married? Yeah, I know. It is, Carol notes, it starts with the state line, and she also says, any more of this feller and I'll have to sign up for the Horn Dental Plan. Going to grind right through, I swear. You're getting married. Islamic.
Families in good godly churches, their sons are rebelling, hanging out with homosexuals and getting married, and the parents are invited. What would you do if that was the case? Here's what I would do.
Okay, really, hockey puck. He's going to tell us what he would do if his child decided to get all gay married. I'm thinking he doesn't get a lot of invitations. Jesus.
Sackcloth and ashes at the entrance to the church, and I'd sit in cow manure, and I'd spread it all over my body. That's what I would do. And I'm not kidding. I'm not laughing. I'm grieving. I'm mourning. I'm pointing out the problem. It's not a gay time. This is the these are the people with the sores, the gaping sores. The sores that are pussy and gross, and people are coming in and carving happy faces on the sores. That's not a nice thing to do.
I should think not. I'm a little worried about who Kevin Swanson's running around with, to tell you the truth. Carving happy faces on the sores? What? No, Marty, this is Bill and Ted's homosexual adventure. So, what does he do for the 4th of July? Hey, Mom, you seen Dad? Yeah, he's a... Hey, you didn't do your homework. He's out sitting in cow shit and ashes. He's not laughing. He is not laughing. The quadratic equation is nothing to laugh about. Yeah, what was that about the sores?
Pointing out the problem. It's not a gay time. This is the these are the people with the sores, the gaping sores. The sores that are pussy and gross, and people are coming in and carving happy faces on the sores. That's not a nice thing to do. Don't you dare carve happy faces on open pussy sores. Don't you ever do that.
Don't you ever do that. Don't you dare. Marching up and down the stage, pointing at people, and don't you ever do that! 52 years I've been on this planet, and never have I once thought, you know, I'm bored. I'm going to go carve some happy faces on some sore. Carve? Carve? Really? Carve? Okay, maybe Sharpies? Oh, I bet he doesn't understand what a Sharpie is. He thinks it's a knife. I mean, this guy was up on a stage. How does he get from the living room to the bathroom without somebody following him with a butterfly net? Don't you do that.
Don't you ever do that. I tell you, don't do it. Sackcloth and ashes. This is what America needs. America needs to hear the message. We are messed up.
We are. America needs sackcloth and ashes and a front yard full of cow poo. And it's not just you gotta rub the cow poo all around real good. And he gets to vote. And he apparently influences people who get to vote. All because this is, you know, this is right in there with, you know, poor Elsa singing "Let It Go." He needs to let it go. And I think the folks at, don't you dare carve happy faces on open. I mean, this is the price we pay for the First Amendment. What if this guy was not protected by the First Amendment? What would happen to him? Precisely nothing. Note coming in from Jay Cruz. And Bob, you know, the hockey puck warning is one thing. I live in an apartment here in Florida, less privacy than my house in North Carolina. When you play crap like this, Freakazoid, I need to turn the radio down before your neighbors think you're... I need a turn the radio down before your neighbors think you are insane warning. Look, listen however you want to, Jay Cruzen. Usually when I'm doing, I go straight to the headphones. But I get your point. I've wondered myself. Michael in Madison says, shiny happy faces carved in sores. Bob, this isn't real, right? This guy sounds like a Kids in the Hall sketch. I'm dying. You know what I was thinking, Michael? I was thinking Andy Kaufman lives. Because if Andy Kaufman was still alive, this is the kind of stuff. He wouldn't be wrestling women anymore. I mean, he'd be doing this. I don't know what to tell you about this guy. But lots of people are paying attention to him. And that does not bode well for our nation. No, it does not. Not at all. Yeah, what else? What else have we got this evening? Well, let's get a little closer back to home here, at least, well, for me. And let's check in with politics as usual here in Almost Level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan. Mm-hmm. This actually happened a while back, almost a year ago. Little more than 11 months ago. It was December 5th, 2014, when Sergeant J.A. Vance of the West Virginia State Police pulled over a vehicle down in Greenbrier County, Lewisburg, West Virginia, on what appeared to be a speeding charge. And it was, to say the very least, a routine traffic stop, right? Well, there's dash cam audio and dash cam video. Shall we give a listen? Do.
I'm Coming back to see you now.
Okay, one, an older figure wearing what appears to be black jeans, tennis sneakers of some sort, and a red V-neck gets stumbling out of the car. I mean, you can go to the Bluefield Daily Telegraph and find this video. But, I mean, he kind of, and never get out of the car and come back to see the officer. And, no, this isn't a trooper. I think this is a sheriff's deputy. Anyway, what are you doing? I'm getting ready to come see you. And just another night pulling over. Well, here we go.
I'm coming back to see you now. Here's your license and insurance back. Trouble, you might check with DMV. Your tags are coming back not on file. I'm
not
a
company.
The city?
Yes,
or
sir. Okay, so he's with the city. Did you hear that? Your tags are coming back not on file. Right? So, ordinary circumstances, ordinary people, you, me, God forbid you were a person of color, and the cop comes back and hands you your license and registration, says your tags are coming back not on file, you're not going anywhere. Well, I mean, you may be going to, you're probably going to jail. But not this guy.
What's your name? I'm from the van. So I'll explain it to you real quick. I thought you were speeding, but I didn't drive.
It doesn't matter what you've done. You know, I mean, I am a long way from being, you know,
right
too
here.
Big for the law, but you have got to be a total lunatic for what I do to this. You have got to be crazy.
Now, he's just called the officer crazy and a lunatic. And as far as I can tell, this is one of those rare instances in America where the law enforcement officer is actually behaving in a completely rational and reasonable manner. No guns are drawn. Nobody's on the ground. He's explained that he did cite him for this, but not for that. In other words, he's cutting him a break. Right?
Okay, like I said, I am a long way from being a bus driver. Give me the same. I don't want you to explain anything. I want you to explain to your boss.
Okay. I have a cop to call over in the morning. Well, Monday morning. He reviews everything.
All right, thank you.
Now, God save him.
And he stumbles back to his car and gets in it to drive away. I don't want you to explain anything to me. I want you to explain it to your boss. And again, he doesn't lose his composure. The police officer doesn't. He just goes. Well, who do you reckon that is? Well, that would happen to be a billionaire. Don't have a lot of them in this state, so they're kind of conspicuous. But yes, that would happen to be a billionaire by the name of Jim Justice. Mm-hmm. Jim Justice, who is the presumptive front runner and likely to be the Democratic Party nominee for the office of governor in the 2016 West Virginia gubernatorial elections. This guy's got enough money to buy God for what he's worth and sell him for what he thinks he's worth. I want you to explain it to your boss. Yeah, Jim Justice, yeah, they think he's got somewhere around $1.69 billion. Mm-hmm. Now, this is the same guy whose coal companies don't like to pay their bills. So, that really is his name, Jim Justice. I guess Jim always gets justice. And you know what? This guy's got a pretty good shot at becoming governor. No, I don't think he's related to Buford T. Justice, Marty. Because, best of my knowledge, Buford T. Justice is a fictional character. This guy is painfully real. This is a guy who's made a mint out of blasting away mountains and poisoning people who live below them. You know, the vile, filthy, cancer-causing dust, that kind of stuff. Yeah. And he's probably going to be running for governor against a Republican who's a millionaire, whom you've heard me talk about on this program, most likely, a guy by the name of Bill Cole, who sells a lot of cars and has a mansion and a yacht and a jet. So aren't you just so jealous of me? Come a month from now, I'm going to get to walk into a voting booth and choose between an apparently liquored up billionaire Democratic scofflaw or a Republican who says anybody who makes more than minimum wage is making an unfairly high wage. Now, what a choice. Granted, there's some hope that there might be another Democratic candidate, but a couple of breaks are going to have to go his way before he enters the fray. But hey, you're a 1.69 billionaire kind of guy. Sure, you can upbraid some cop with a high school education, maybe, and 6 weeks down at the State Police Academy. Sure, why not?
I want you to explain it to your boss.
You see, Jim Justice is not supposed to, and he's not supposed to get. He's not even supposed to be slowed down by the local constabulary. Apparently, he did manage to make it home without killing anybody, and that's a bonus. Yeah. Lord of mercy. It's going to be a long year. GK with an email says, in regard to the Scared at America, Scared at America is the subject line, Scared at Merca. One day last week, I had an experience that was bizarre, to say the least. Upon exiting the store with my plunder, it seems I forgot where the car was parked. Usually, the dogs are barking, thus finding the car is never a problem. This time, they were busy ransacking the vittles I'd just purchased. Oops, won't do that again. But, standing there looking for the car, it seems I dawdled a bit too long behind some other guy's car. Now, after finding the car, I was fixing to back up when a guy pulls up next to me and says, "Why are you behind my car?" He did not believe me about forgetting where I parked. Long story short, he told me not to mess with his shit. Exit stage left. He reached down below his seat, and it looked real up, so I got out of Dodge. I am sure he was just picking his toenails, but given the times in which we live, you never know. Now, I am not a nervous fellow, but it's getting strange all around. Wolverines! Yeah, I know, GK. Because freedom's just leaking out all over the place, and it's going to take a lot of protecting. So I'd say we're off to a pretty good start for this Titanic Tuesday, wouldn't you? Oh yes, oh yes. And we got Titanic goodness this evening that just won't quit. I mean, here's one just to take us to the top of the hour in the Green News Report. And so far, we've had a successful hour. No mentions of you know who. We might make it all the way to 9. Sorry, Gerald. This story comes out of Oklahoma, Stan. And it has to do with, because many communities tomorrow will have Veterans Day parades. And a group in Tulsa is all butt hurt because their parade float has been turned down. And so it is that a group called Confederate Veterans Lives Matter, never mind the fact that there are no living Confederate veterans or Civil War veterans of any sort, there was, 25 years ago, a fascinating book called Oldest Living Confederate Widow Tells All, but this is not, no, that was fiction. Confederate Veterans Lives Matter is all butt hurt, and they're going to file a discrimination complaint against the city of Tulsa because the city of Tulsa rejected their application to feature a float in the Veterans Day parade that was described by Arlene Barnum as just a regular old float, have the Confederate flag up there like we have mounted on our trucks and have some people on the float and wave our flags and have some visibility. Uh-huh. The level of titanic intellect that's involved with this is breathtaking. Because these dumb bastards don't seem to understand that the people, the veterans that they're remembering, were not American veterans. They died fighting the United States of America, whose citizenship in said nation they're having abandoned. I mean, if you can have a Confederate veterans float in the Tulsa parade, I hope it will be followed by the Benedict Arnold float. Oh, he was a veteran! I mean, he committed treason against us, but never mind. Now, meanwhile, why are they all butthurt? Well, it turns out that the Confederate Veterans Lives Matter movement is atne ute aitbre if you one what I inme. Because, no, they're not being discriminated against because they want to fly the single most vile and abhorrent flag in the history of this continent, the white history of this continent. No, their application was denied because the dumbasses turned it in late. And moreover, the folks there in Tulsa were concerned that Confederate Veterans Lives Matter was a manifestation of a personal or political agenda, and those things are clearly not allowed within the ambit of the parade guidelines. I would say that it's also at odds with reality because, again, there are no Confederate veterans. They're all dead. And hence, their lives cannot matter. Because see, these Klansmen clowns are trying to make a mockery of Black Lives Matter. But see, even as I understand it, with Black Lives Matter, it is not a complaint that, or rather, let me put it a different way. Black Lives Matter is trying to say that the black lives in being, the ones who have not yet been murdered by police, matter. And it would be good to acknowledge that so more of them aren't killed. Kind of hard to make that argument with the dead traitors. Yeah, you see the problem, right? So anyway, like I said, we have a lot to work with this evening, and of course we've got two more hours of programming. Thank you to Gary and to Darlene for helping us knock out 200 of a $260 fundraising goal for the evening. That was huge. Hey, how about six more folks at $10 subscription? Remember, everybody gets a bumper sticker. Mm-hmm. We'll take a break. Your calls are always welcome. Over on the Skype line, Skype to Skype is Bob Kincaid Horn, but you know that. And then, of course, 304-574-8178 is line one. There is someone presently on the stress line, 304-663-4676, but you might make a note of that as well. All right. Mm-hmm. Thank you, by the way. Thank you, Kathy, in the chat room. Your subscription came through this evening, and that's why the number went down. Thank you very kindly. So, yeah, a break. Light up the phones, what have you, and we'll get right after it. Let's see, what would... Trying to... just looking for... little something to bump out with. Oh, why not? Sure. Because, well, I mean, this applies to that whole parade thing, I think. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Favorite tune. We'll send a call. It's Tuesday, November 10, 2015.
We're going to have to keep some fossil fuels in the ground rather than burn them.
A bad week for fossil fuels. Obama rejects Keystone XL pipeline. Peabody Coal caught lying to the public about climate change. ExxonMobil now under investigation for what it knew and when it knew it. Plus,
SeaWorld is phasing out the theatrical killer whale show.
Amid backlash, SeaWorld San Diego finally responds to critics.
Fossil Fuels No Good Very Bad Week and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Who spends money on energy prices? It is disproportionately affecting minority and low-income families.
Very convenient that the conservatives are so concerned about the poor on the one issue where it benefits the Koch brothers.
Imagine that. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, as the planet is heating up, so too are the legal consequences, it seems, for the fossil fuel industry.
Yeah, it's been a very, very interesting couple of days for big fossil fuels. First, Keystone XL is dead.
The State Department has decided that the Keystone XL pipeline would not serve the national interests of the United States. I agree with that decision.
That was President Obama rejecting a permit for the controversial proposed Keystone XL pipeline on Friday. Obama cited climate change as his primary reason for rejecting that cross-border permit.
America's now a global leader when it comes to taking serious action to fight climate change. And frankly, approving this project would have undercut that global leadership. Today, we're continuing to lead by example. Because ultimately, if we're going to prevent large parts of this earth from becoming not only inhospitable, but uninhabitable in our lifetimes, we're going to have to keep some fossil fuels in the ground rather than burn them.
President Obama's decision now adds momentum to the UN climate talks coming up in December in a few weeks. He says he will attend personally.
Well, that's a huge deal. It's a huge, largely symbolic deal, I think, in regard to the Keystone XL pipeline. But I think most important is that it sends a message to organizers and advocates and activists out there that if you organize, get things together, yes, you can take on the most powerful industry in the history of civilization. Way to go, activists.
Also taking on the most powerful industry in the history of civilization, New York State. A 2-year investigation by New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman has found Peabody Coal, the world's largest coal company, misled its investors about how regulations to fight climate change could hurt the coal industry. That's a violation of a New York State law that protects investors from fraud. In a settlement announced Monday, the first of its kind against a fossil fuel company, Peabody Coal will pay no fines and admit no wrongdoing, but it must amend its shareholder documents from the past and in the future to reflect the actual science of climate change.
So it's actually costing them nothing? No money? No nothing?
That's right.
So what kind of accountability is that?
Not much, activists note, but it does require them to not lie about it in the future.
Wow. Color me unimpressed with Eric Schneiderman in that case.
But wait, there is more. Attorney General Schneiderman on Friday went further. He has subpoenaed oil giant ExxonMobil following revelations that Exxon's management knew about the dangers of climate change as early as 1977, yet funded a climate science denial network to mislead the public and investors about climate change. Eric Schneiderman's investigation into Exxon seeks information and documents to find out exactly what Exxon knew and when it knew it, and if it broke the law about lying to investors.
At the end of which, he may write them a sternly worded note?
That may be the case.
Sounds like we need the Department of Justice in on this, because somebody needs to be held accountable for defrauding the public.
Meanwhile, in other news, SeaWorld announced on Monday it will end its theatrical shows featuring orcas performing tricks. SeaWorld executives announced they will phase out the killer whale show at the San Diego facility next year and replace it with a new, quote, informative experience in a more natural setting. The move comes after public backlash sparked by the documentary film Blackfish, showing orca abuse in captivity, that harmed ticket sales. Plus, California officials last month banned SeaWorld from breeding any more killer whales in captivity. but the show is being phased out at only one of SeaWorld's facilities.
Naturally.
Finally, 2015 continues to break records for extreme weather. 1 week ago, the Arab nation of Yemen was hit with its first ever hurricane in recorded history. Now another hurricane has made landfall in the same war-torn region. That's two hurricane-strength cyclones in 1 week where none had been recorded before, thanks to record warm ocean temperatures.
Other than that, why worry? For much more on all of the stories we covered today and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Riders on the storm. Riders on the storm. Into this house we're born.
The ever-informative, ever-enjoyable Green News Report, courtesy of Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. Thank you. Thank you very much. 13 minutes past the hour. We are into the second hour of this Titanic Tuesday program. And again, a reminder, if you want to jump in Skype to Skype on the conversation, you know what? We love, we absolutely adore first-time callers and everyone else, too, for that matter. So, if you've never sent me a contact request on Skype, the address, the handle, as it were, is Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. And, of course, you can also use line 1-304-574-8178. We will, however, at this point in time, run over to the stress line and see what see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, this is Carol in Las Vegas.
Hey, Carol, how are you?
I'm doing okay. Before I get to my main point, well, first of all, in the next day or two, I'm going to be writing some checks, so I'll cut you a check for 20 and get it out in the mail.
Thank you, kindly.
You know, last week,
Carol? Carol? We're still connected. Oh, I know what happened. Hang on, Carol. Hang on just a minute. Hey, Carol, do me a favor. Just a second. Don't go anywhere. Now, I don't know why this. There we go. There, you're back.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I have no idea what happened there. Bluetooth just completely fell out.
Technology. Like I say, you guys were talking about when Obama came to West Virginia talking about the drug overdose problem and, you know, the problem with pills and drugs. And, you know, it always angers me that there's all this talk about, well, we have to do something and get these, take these drugs away and all of this. The drugs are a symptom of a problem.
Absolutely.
They never want to solve the problem, but they want to go to desperate people who, right or wrong, are trying to get through a day or a week. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, let's take away the one thing they have that maybe is a crutch instead of taking care of the problem. You know what I mean? And it just really angers me when so many people and organizations talk about that. But anyway, the main thing I wanted to talk about was this last weekend, Dateline ran their segment of the Shauna murder case. It was called Under the Full Moon or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I went online and watched it. If anybody wants to see it, you can go to Justice for Shauna and then click on Justice for Shauna Facebook and it's scroll down and they have the link. But why I'm calling is I'm really, really angry because I'm glad that these programs are showing who Shauna was and how horrible this was. They really, I was actually a journalism major in college a million years ago, which I did nothing with, of course, but there were so many mistakes in the way they handled this. And I'm not going to go on a long thing, but just real quick, Like, for instance, they made the comment that the hammer that Noel Stevens used to kill Shauna with was not one that was bought when George was shopping with him. That is incorrect. In fact, when you look at the video that 48 Hours showed and Dateline showed of them in Walmart, and you picked up a hammer from the shelf, that was the hammer. And to make a mistake like that, it really just pissed me off. And the other thing is, of course, they're going to show both sides and his big sister and the defense attorney, you know, poo-pooing the testimony of Noel Stevens and all of it. Like it's, well, it's just this crazy guy and they took his word, which is incorrect. And what I want to just really quickly do is, for instance, of the 87 phone calls that George called Noel Stevens in the little less than 4 weeks before the murder, one of the calls was George calling Noel when he was in her townhouse waiting for her to come home when he killed her. For about a month and a half, she had lost her garage door opener and was coming, parking her car at the closed garage and walking through the side of her townhouse in the darkness through the front door to go open the garage. So Noel, what they had figured out was he would wait in the closet behind the front door to attack her. Well, the Friday, and it was that Friday night, Saturday morning she was killed, the office called Shauna, said, pick up your garage door opener, it's in, that she had lost. So George TFA called her, Shauna had texted George saying she had the garage door opener. In fact, she had two, and if you needed one to get in to bring Maddie home, blah, blah, blah. So George calls Noel in her townhouse that night while he's waiting and said, you need to go to the bathroom and hide in there because she's going to be coming in through the garage. And in the trial, while Noel was on the stand, the prosecuting attorney was going through the transcript of his confession and said, yeah, I had to change because George called me and told me she'll be coming in the other way. There was no other way for him to know that unless George called and told him. And I'm just bringing this up because I'm so angry. I'm planning on emailing. I'm going to watch it again. I'm going to take notes. I'm going to email NBC and really give them some shit for these inaccuracies and everything.
So just to sort of fill people in, this is a story that you have been sharing with us for nearly years now, and it is a horrifying murder, as if all of them aren't. But this is particularly gruesome because it was someone who was near and dear to you. Do you think Carol, it was an attempt on NBC's part to try to make it sexier and that's a gross term and I apologize, but or to make it look like it was a closer call than it was?
Exactly, you're exactly right, because George was valedictorian. He went to West Point, you know, he all of these things, which just shows that you can be all of these things. But he is a psychopath, and nobody realized it. His family didn't realize it. Nobody realized it. But if you watch both of the programs, Shauna's older sister Paula, who I never knew until the murder, and got to know, he was controlling, and it's one of those situations where, on the outside, he's soft-spoken and all of these things, but in the home, he's a different person. In the home, he would push her up against the wall in front of his daughter when she'd come home shopping and say, look at what your mother bought. She's a whore. She doesn't want to spend money on you. She spends it on herself. this is the kind of thing he was doing. And if anybody watches Dateline or watched it or brings it up, like if you bring it up, the two women in the beginning were two women one of them's still in town, but she's at another casino. The other one's out of town. But I worked with him for 12 years. And, you know, they talk about Shauna and stuff like that, and it will give you some idea. But my point is, you're correct. NBC decided, you know, we're not going to say all of these details, and I could go on and on and on and on, which I won't. That absolutely nailed him. He is 110% guilty. You know, but it's what you said just then, Bob. I know that's what it was. They wanted to leave it up in the air a little bit because, you know, he seemed like such a politically correct guy. So, I don't know. But I just wanted to get that off my chest because I'm really, really pissed off and that's one reason I haven't watched television in my home since 2004. Any TV I see is at work when I'm in the employee cafeteria. Of course, there's TVs all over the place and stuff like that. And, you know, when I pick up on some of the things. But I know I'm not missing much by not watching TV, that's for sure.
Not a lot on there, really.
You know, it's really sad. But, so if anybody saw it or goes online, and I would recommend to see it because there are a couple good things in there, and a lot of, you know, videos of Shauna and things like that. Unfortunately, toward the end, you know, in 48 hours at the courtroom, I pretty much stayed out of the view of the cameras, but toward the end, when they're showing the gallery, if you see a older, really pissed off looking Sicilian guy in a yellow shirt, that's me.
Okay. Hey, well, I know some people have seen it. In fact, Carol was just telling me that she watched it, and she said it did seem like they tried to leave some room for doubt, but she walked away from it feeling like she felt pretty confident that he did it. And,
well,
and
like
really,
I
really,
say,
there
I
wasn't
could,
there wasn't much doubt. I mean, it didn't seem like there was a lot of doubt in the jury's mind, did it?
No, and when you think that the jury convicted and gave him the maximum sentence, life without parole, you know, West Point grad, valedictorian, you know, and what I always wondered was that they try to indicate, oh, he's helping all these homeless people. Gee, you know what? They didn't bring any of them into the courtroom to testify on his behalf. You know, where are they?
How do you get to make that argument then? That kind of baffles me.
Well, exactly. And one more quick thing. George, they did show where, you know, he brought his, when the cops played their little move, and they informed his mother and sister that they're going to pick him up and arrest him on murder charges, conspiracy to commit murder, robbery, and all of that. He brought Maddie home, dropped her off, and took off. And, you know, since he's a fireman, he probably picked up on the fact that somebody was following him. And that was just pure panic. You know, and my point is this. I knew so many things because of talking to people and people I knew. But even I didn't know, and it came out in the courtroom, that after George tried to kill himself in the auto, and then they got a search warrant, went to his home, there was a almost finished suicide note. And I was like, holy crap. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's one reason I'm calling. If anybody saw it, trust me, he is 110% guilty, no matter what anybody says. But anyway, as usual, I gotta
What a monstrous thing! How long have you lived with this?
Well, she was murdered on September 29th, 2012, when she got off and went home that night. It was a Friday night. And at that time, I was what was called a dual rate. I was dealing and supervising. And on that night, I was dealing that night. Now I'm a supervisor. I never wanted to be, but Wall Street's messed up Vegas so much, and that's a whole nother story. But, and Shauna was the table games cocktail waitress only on swing shift. So, you know, I would, every night, he was on vacation. But, and remember, because when I came in the next day and was told she was found dead, I remembered that she walked by my game, dropping off her last round of drinks at about 10 minutes till 3 in the morning. And I saw her. But it's very surreal. You know, when you watch, never would I have thought that, you know, I'd watch a TV magazine program, you know, about all these murders and everything like that. And it would be somebody that I knew very well, that's for sure. But anyway, like I say, I just want anybody who had seen it to know that it was no fluke. There's no doubt. And, you know, his sister talked about, you know, on appeal, you know, he's in jail and, you know, he's forming a prayer group. And I'm like,
oh, don't they always?
You know, go F yourself, you know.
See, Your anyway, Honor, Jesus has forgiven me. You should, too. Just let me out. I'll never do it again, maybe.
You know what? I'm an agnostic, but... And when I was a kid, I was actually an Episcopalian acolyte for 4 years, so I know a lot about the Christian religion. And I'm certainly not going to get off on that subject, but what these clowns talk about, these right-wingers, has nothing to do with... And whether you're an atheist, an agnostic, or a believer, it has nothing to do what they try to say it does. That's for sure. But anyway,
well, I'm glad you did call in, Carol, to shed a little light on the subject.
Well, I
appreciate
just
it.
So you know, yeah, and I like I say, if you have time, and you know, you can just go to Justice for Shauna, and then click on the Facebook. And scroll down, and you can see the Dateline link.
Okay, I will. And is that S-H-A-U-N-A?
S-H-A-U-N-A.
Yeah, okay.
Justice for Shauna.
Okay.
And,
I imagine people will be going and watching, and I appreciate it. Well, I wish you well on your shift this evening. You know, maybe one of these days I'll get out that way, and we can get together.
If you ever, you know, someday maybe you'll get out to Vegas and let me know. Let me just do one more quick thing.
Okay.
You know, I was in there for the whole trial, and I couldn't be there for the sentencing. Now, the sentencing for the last six counts has been put off until sometime late in December. And Shauna's older sister, Paul, you know, I got to know her, and she's really an amazing person. And this is the note that I was going to give her, and I'm going to give her when I see her this next time. So I just thought I'd share it. And I said, Paula, it has never been more true that in a time like this, words truly fail. I'm sorry. I just wanted you to know that through all this, your strength, your dignity, and your humanity has been an inspiration to us all. It is my greatest wish that Madison in time finds her way to a peaceful and happy life. I shall never forget. Sorry about that. I'm going to let you go.
All right, Carol, you take care. Be well.
Take it. Bye.
Bye now. It is very easy to see stories in the news and to perhaps forget that what appear to be stories are very, very, very much attached to real human beings. And that's a case in point. And again, if you want to see the Dateline segment, you can go to Facebook, Justice 4, the numeral 4, Shauna, S-H-A-U-N-A, Justice 4 Shauna. And just scroll down a little ways, and you'll find it. It's a brutal story. And I thank Carol for sharing with us. And I thank the community, the Horn Family Commune Congregation, for being there and for listening and for empathizing. We are a little over the, little past the halfway point of the program this evening. It's about 27 minutes before the hour. It is Titanic Tuesday. And yes, there is ever so much more to go into this evening. When we, the case that Carol was discussing is a case of horrific violence against a woman. And it seems that throughout the world, that issue is probably the one that more people have problems with than just about anything else. Trying to educate a certain segment of the human population that violence against women is not okay, but it is never justifiable, and you kind of hope that maybe other countries get it a little bit better than the United States does, but every now and then you get a reminder that no, that's not necessarily the case. Hate it when the sneeze doesn't happen. So it looks like the weirdness has metastasized across the Atlantic. There is a Carol mentioned being raised Episcopalian. The mother church of that is, of course, the Church of England, the Anglican Church. And over in the UK, there is there's an institution called St. Hild's, H-I-L-D apostrophe S, St. Hild's Church of England School. It's a church school. And parents send their children there for a variety of reasons. So Carol McEnany, different Carol, was shocked when her daughter came home with some new information. She had arrived at school that day wearing a skirt with a pair of knee socks, downright typical of the. And she was handed a pair of tights. And a letter went out from St. Hild's Church of England School saying, "In the interest of modesty and to ensure your child is properly safeguarded on their way to and from school, we ask that black tights be worn
with skirts at all times.
This did not sit well with Carol McEnany. She explained, the school said that if she didn't wear tights, she would be put in isolation or sent home. I want to get my point across that girls should have the right to choose. My daughter does not dress inappropriately. She's perfectly presentable, and there shouldn't be a problem, as the skirt isn't short. It's about knee height. Because, you see, the folks at St. Hilde's Church of England School have decided that females must wear tights with their skirts, and the tights must be opaque. I mean, we're not talking about any ultra-sheer Hanes her way pantyhose or any sort of thing such as that. No, we're talking about a million denier hosiery tights that, yes, absolutely opaque, and one could not tell that there is actual flesh underneath them. No, of course not. Because, you see, that if they wear tights with their skirts, it will keep the young males from getting all rapey. No, really. St. Hilde's Church of England School is going to prevent rape by making the girls wear opaque tights. And they're deeming it a safety measure. It is, of course, according to the correspondence that the parents received, it is an interim measure. In the interest of modesty, and to ensure your child is properly safeguarded on the way to and from school, we ask that black tights be worn with skirts at all times, effective from Monday, November 9th, 2015. These should be opaque tights, no less than 40 deniers. Alternatively, your child may wish to wear black school trousers, as stipulated in the uniform section of the school website. Never in the history of human endeavor have so many been so insulted by so few. Has no one explained to the administrators there at St. Hilde's Church of England School that females don't cause rape? Especially, you know, little girls going to church school, like middle school, elementary school, whatever, high school, that girls don't cause rape, that rape is a crime of violence perpetrated by males against females. No? No? Because, I mean, if 40 denier opaque tights are going to preserve modesty and prevent the rape, well, then let's just send all the girls to school in plaster printing casts, okay? Just mummy them up. Hey, borrow a burqa or two or several or a dozen. Jesus, God. Yeah, we would like to review our school uniform policy, and we'll be inviting you to take part in a full consultation in due course. However, we have a particular concern at the moment regarding the length of skirts worn by some of our female students. Because, you know, there's that threshold, and if a skirt is higher than that arbitrarily assigned level, then boys can't help it if they get all rapey. Why is it that figuring this out proves to be more difficult than human beings figuring out, you know, fire, the wheel, language? Hogsie short skirt.
Hog must rape. I know what. Here's a lovely idea. Let's teach the young boys not to rape. Zounds. That's nigh impossible.
Well, yeah, I guess they haven't figured out the whole coffee cup problem yet in the UK. But they will. They will. Don't worry. Meanwhile, back here in Merca,
the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, indivisible, under God.
Back here in Merca, well, this is a slightly different problem. It's the story of a little boy, 10 years old, named Jose. Jose and his mother, Maria, left El Salvador without looking back last month. They were desperate to get away from El Salvador and the gang violence that plagues that tiny nation. Before they left, part of the reason they did leave is that gang members had targeted 10-year-old Jose every day for being gay. And they used homophobic slurs against him. They beat him up at school. Maria's brother is in Maryland. So they did everything they could to get to Maria's brother. Maria and Jose, of course, that's not their real names. Well, they crossed the U.S. border last month. And they were sent to the not horrible sounding Karnes County Residential Center in Texas. Now, what these are, we call them residential centers. What they are is they are concentration camps for undocumented immigrants, including children. We have three of these in the country, and people are held there before they can get before an immigration judge to make their plea. And it's not a low hurdle to get across. Maria and Jose the burden of proof will be on them to show to an immigration judge that they have what the law refers to as a credible fear that will keep them from feeling safe in their own country, to wit, El Salvador. Which kind of makes me wonder about what would happen if I went before an immigration judge in some developed country and said, listen, I have a credible fear that I'm not going to be safe in my home country because people have lost their freaking minds there, and any time you go to the grocery store now, you got a halfway decent chance of getting murdered. All in the name of freedom. So here's the rub. As early as tomorrow, Maria and Jose may be sent back to El Salvador. Because after all,
greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, indivisible, under God.
Monitoring up Maria and Jose. Because, see, they have been deemed not to meet the criteria of their credible fear, even though the gangs were beating up her son every day. Why? Well, Maria comes from a devoutly pious family. And when they got to their credible fear interview, which is the name of the interview. Oh, my. When they got to their credible fear interview, Maria was scared and ashamed to explain that the reason they are not safe in El Salvador is because it is a deeply homophobic culture, and that her 10-year-old son was being slurred and beaten for the perception that he is gay. Now, mind you, Maria didn't have a lawyer for this hearing, and Maria wasn't fully apprised of what the nature of the inquiry was. 10-year-old Jose didn't get a chance to explain what it is that was going on. Today, the re-interview request that was submitted by Emily Poole, who's an Immigration Justice Corps fellow, well, that was denied. And the Salvadoran consulate told mother and son that they would be deported from the United States so that the child could go back and be beaten every day of his life in El Salvador. Emily Poole, describing the situation, said this case illustrates how ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, this case illustrates how ICE is shuttling people through the process without giving people time to talk to a lawyer, to understand what's important, what kind of information they need to give. It's not really taking into account cultural factors of fear of giving information, which show that they qualify for asylum. They're also not talking to children about their experiences to let them also show that they have asylum claims. So remind me again how it is that that one in our White House, the, you know, Kenyan Muslim, you slurper wizard, remind me again how it is that he's just turned our borders into a porous sieve. Wonder if that's one of those. I wonder if Jose or Maria was one. Were some of those Mexican rapists about whom T. Rump is so worked up? Yeah, I know. 10 minutes before the hour, thank you very kindly to Jay Cruzen for jumping in and becoming a member of the, hopefully one of these days, 400 Club. Thank you. And thank you to Thomas for jumping in as well. That means we've got $40 remaining in this evening's fundraising. Thanks very, very much indeed. Let's go back over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
Well, you know, Jim.
All right. Yeah, I just heard Carol's call, and I saw some of what he said, but I can identify with it because I've seen things the way the media will put a spin on things to try and get the most viewing points for people watching, and that can be real, angering. About a year ago, because it's coming up on the anniversary of JFK's assassination, and it was a 2-hour front line. I remember, I don't want to watch it because I know it's going to be a whitewash, but I just watched it. And sure enough, man, it's just, what they'll kind of do is you know more about the story, or you may know more, and just the way they present it, and the kind of half truths, and maybe it's just because you didn't do it that it appears differently. You know what I mean?
Right.
But it can be real, real. I guess it's like you might notice with an attorney, if you're in the courtroom or if you're following a trial, points in time where the attorney made a mistake or, didn't do anything. But and kind of watch it, hoping for some sort of truth, and it just gets worse and better. Nine times out of ten, it's just better to turn off the TV, but I definitely identify with his anger. And then the media, that's the whole reason for the media. It's not to give you the truth, it's to sell commercials while they're teasing you with maybe some sort of truth with a carrot, you know, a carrot and a stick.
Right, but see, that's what happened to the for-profit media, Jim. They went from they were co-opted into the process of selling soap.
Oh yeah,
and you know other stuff. And so it, and with the proliferation of so many cable channels, my God, I take everything with a grain of salt because I never know if I sit down to watch one of these things. And it was a dark and stormy night, and you're sitting there, this is interesting, and that's when the aliens landed. Oh, me, really?
Yeah. Well, it's like even with 100 channels, I mean, it's to the point, I mean, you can get the non-commercial channels, but, I mean, basically, I realized this a long time ago that, you know, you can change your channel, either change your channel. Basically, all shows are on a 9-minute run. I mean, if they're on commercial TV, because basically that's about what every time they got to run a commercial. And it seems like I've noticed where they have to, it seems like they're trying to squeeze in more goddamn commercials than they can. You know, is that my imagination?
No, because that's what it exists for. People labor under this notion that there are companies out there, corporations and whatnot, that want to deliver you programming, and nothing could be further from the truth. They're teasing you with programming so as to deliver you to advertisers. I mean that's the way it works.
Oh yeah. And what was it? Was it you talking about it? How they want to? Or I've seen it on the internet where if you let you know. They're just begging for more, a way to get in to do commercials on the internet, you know? It's just all over, you know? So I guess it's
and yeah, you watching your father's career, there's no doubt that you saw, some media manipulation.
Oh, I mean, I remember him complaining before I could really even realize what was going on, how they were just attacking. I mean, like he was endorsed. The only time he was endorsed was when he was running as the against the incumbent. And then from then on, since he kind of pretty much stirred up some stuff that was before the Shaw trial, the JFK investigation. And they never forget. You know, they keep on coming at, you know, they just come after you, trying, you know, and then a partial truth, or not even a partial truth, just the mere mention of something with no backing, that can just go on to, I guess it's an unsubstantiated charge or allegation.
Right.
It just goes, you know. Well, that's not true, but you don't even say that. You know, it's just like when Gore lost the election. It was, the 17th page of the New York Times?
Yeah.
Section 1 said that was print, that he actually lost, and yet then we ended up with Bush 2, president. Look at all the good he did. I mean, geez, you know, talk about screwing up the country. Yeah, I mean, it's incredible if you think if the election would have gone as it should have gone, I doubt 9/11 would have happened. I don't see any way for it to happen because, you know, but, you know, what, 6,000 Americans died in that war, no telling how many with PTSD and what other, wounded. Since now a lot of people can survive the original injury, but they come back without an arm or a leg or you know, psychologically really torn up. And they did it for God and their country and two false idols, I guess. So,
yeah.
So I definitely identify with what Kara was saying, and like that's just the way the corporate media works. I guess you know that, you know, a little bit.
Yeah, sure. That's why we're us and they're them.
Yeah. All right. Well, let somebody else get in.
All right. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate you chiming in.
All right.
Bye now. Our buddy Jim calling from Nevada Stan, formerly of Louisiana Stan. Yeah. Hey, what time does the clown arc depart this evening? I don't even know. I'm so far past caring. We're not going to try to. I don't think we'll even try to run any audio or anything. No, it's just silly. Okay, so 3 minutes before the hour. We'll probably take a little break here and give folks a chance to hot up the lines if they want to. Line 1, 304-574-8178. That's also the Skype line. Bob Kincaid Horn is the Skype contact. Who's hosting it? It's being hosted by Fox Business Channel with able assistance from the Wall Street Journal. Fox Business Channel, that's where the guy with the cowboy hat that the Stern sort of overtook and replaced. That's where he does his thing. Does he still on there? I don't know. That might be kind of fun what is his name? Hat. But anyway, it might be kind of fun if he got to ask some questions, but they still haven't gotten their dream debate yet. You know, the one where the questions are all being asked by Rush Limbaugh and Mark Levin and Sean Hannity. I don't know if there's enough popcorn to get you through one of those. okay, Little Gray in the chat room says, expect Stuart Varney, Judge Napolitano, Lou Dobbs, and Eric Bowling. All lunatics, all white, all male, all sociopaths. Yeah, no kidding. So, yeah, little break if you want to jump in on the stress line, 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. That'll work, too. We're reachable just about any way you care to try. Oh, mercy me. Oh, Imus. Thank you, GK. Thank you, Imus. Took me a minute. Yeah, so like I said, little break, and then your calls or another hour of filibobstering, whatever. It all works out. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is probably playing in the green room.
Everybody was kung fu fighting. Those kids were fast as lightning. In fact, it was a little bit frightening. But they fought with
3 minutes past the hour. And so, let's see. Well, thank you, Jim. Jim with a compliment. Jim says, love the bumper. Myself, I am a moth belt. Yes. Yes. I'm a fourth Dan Puce myself. Jesus. So it will apparently be Neil Cavuto and what's her name, Maria Bartiromo, and that ought to just be dandy. Just so everybody knows that it'll be fair, Maria Bartiromo said, "I'm an independent. I've voted both ways in my life. I've voted Republican and teabagger." No. But so, yeah, okay, good, great, lovely. Let's run back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Yo, on the stress line.
On the stress line.
Yes, you are.
Is the Roger from Minnesota.
I thought that was you, Roger. How in the world are you?
Well, I am distressed.
To what end?
As the person in whose charge is a special needs kid in the state of Minnesota.
Yes.
I have to go to helping this kid. And the partially blind, semi-socialist state power does not wish to gather full information about how people who care for special needs individuals are doing what needs to be done. It is a vexing and ongoing near tragedy, and highlights the imperfection of social networks of many varieties. It's really complex questions. And really rather more interesting to my mind than whatever Republican fascists are up to. I mean, these good Democratic people are into a form of semi-fascism themselves. Witness our good Governor Dayton and his apparent preparation to approve a sulfide mining project in northern Minnesota that will devastate the region, devastate. So
yeah, to the extent. Well, it will devastate it more than it already is because, good God, what's the river up there? The St. Louis River. The St. Louis River. That's in the Iron Range, isn't it, Roger? And it's already got cancer clusters and.
St. Louis, Knife, Vermilion. There's a whole list of them, and it's if you remember the very famous district court judge Miles Lord back in the 70s when the taconite mining was hitting full tilt and it was discovered large amounts of asbestos into the waterways, and whenever one of the holding ponds released, that it would result in very large releases of essentially all the asbestos content and what knows else, all the heavy metals, all the mining materials, all the... Miles Lord said very simply, that, do you remember the famous judge, Miles Lord?
Yes, yes, I'm familiar with the name, yes.
Well, he basically ruled that every drop of what was in the holding ponds of the taconite mines was going to wind up in Lake Superior. Now, he got countermanded through a very nasty process. Right now, we have a company that wants to exploit the opportunity to do copper and nickel mining right adjacent to the Boundary Waters Canoe Area, which is a remarkable nature preserve in northern Minnesota. And if it is allowed to proceed, it is almost inevitable that all of the chemicals involved will become released into that aquasphere. And it's just, it just casts a light. Here we have a Democratic administration in the state of Minnesota. And be it relatively benevolent, it has blindnesses too. How do we work out a less blind society than even the best of what we've got so far is my question.
And I don't know. I mean, is there a hard and fast answer?
I mean,
we seem to be making a little bit of progress because you've got Barack Obama out there saying, we're just going to have to leave some of the oil in the ground. It seems maybe the next step is to say, you know, there's lots of stuff we need to leave in the ground.
Yeah, I think we need to leave just about everything in the ground. We've got plenty where we are, and we've exploited enough metals to last us for a very, very long time. We just need to access them. We have already created enough national and international and worldwide devastation area to suffice.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, you mentioned taconite. I immediately thought about what Chris Klein wanted to do to the Pinokies. I'm getting a lot of noise on your line there, Roger. Are you on a speaker or something? Or
I'm on one of the famous UE speakers, which, in fact, I believe you own one of. They are remarkable.
Yes.
And not perfect.
They are. They're remarkable. I've never tried to use the phone functionality of one.
Sure. Let me try switching over to iPhone. Let's see if that helps. One sec. Am I there?
Yeah, you're here.
Is it better?
By Jove, I believe it is.
All right.
There was like a wind issue or a noise issue.
Well, I'm out in the flight paths. Recently, the Metropolitan Airport Commission in the Twin Cities has designated the area under which I live here for the most part, except for when I'm in Wisconsin or Wyoming or California. But mostly I live here with my special needs kid and whoever happens to show up. they designated this area now essentially a sacrifice zone as well, in that they're covering the neighborhood with about 250 flights in about 3.5 hours. In other words, every 6 seconds there is a flight headed into the Minneapolis airport. So that might have been interfering with our audio.
Okay. Well, things did improve dramatically there, so I appreciate it.
Well, the trouble is that sacrifice zones seem to pop up wherever it is convenient for capitalism.
Well, sacrifice zones pop up wherever capitalism needs a sacrifice, and it's not.
Well,
and of course, it's not it's not, you know, them doing the sacrificing. I mean, I saw, and you talk about sacrifice zones. I saw a story the other day about a sludge dam busting loose down in Brazil. I mean, this stuff happens all over. You remember that, you were talking about, you know, all these poisons winding up in Lake Superior. As long as there's no means to sufficiently punish someone who lets this something like this happen, it's going to keep happening. If mistakes happen, and those mistakes continue to have no consequences, then they really aren't mistakes anymore, are they?
Well, that's the systemic conundrum. Where can we get a line drawn?
Oh, yeah. I think an admirable line would be the precautionary principle, don't you?
Yes, exactly. The precautionary principle, however, would preclude the use of any questionable technology until it became quite clear that it was safe.
That's true.
And that is the antithesis, for example, of the Trans-Pacific Agreement.
Well, it's the sand mining that's taking place down in southern Minnesota and southern Wisconsin, that could never take place under the precautionary principle because we couldn't be sure that it would be absolutely, absolutely, positively possible to keep people living near it safe.
Well,
but that doesn't mean it's a bad thing.
The silicosis that is resulting from the sand mining, and it extends well up into northern Wisconsin, is absolutely devastating. And I am affected. The area around New Auburn, Wisconsin, I was describing the terminal and the... You just have a look sometime at Google Earth.
Oh, I've driven past it.
Oh, my God.
It blew my mind. I mean, I'm used to seeing coal terminals and so forth. The New Auburn facility was just mind-boggling. Miles and miles and miles of train cars being loaded with this stuff that's being blasted out of the sandhills.
Yep.
And they're
doing it on a scale that is almost unimaginable.
And every blast carries its own deadly deadly load.
Well, all, you know, shatter those pieces of silica even smaller, and the science has been in since the late 70s around that stuff, and then spike it with diesel. Polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, and what have you?
Some crustal rare earth elements, some aluminum, some manganese.
Make a list. We are not living in a just world, and because we're conscious, we are burdened with the responsibility to create that world.
I agree. The problem is, well, we sense the burden, but we are not necessarily empowered to impose the burden.
Well, I want to hear what Angry has to say about this.
Well, we will consider that a shout-out to Angry.
Shout-out to Angry. Thank you, Bob.
No problem at all. No problem at all. Roger, it's good hearing from you. And
good hearing from you.
You know, the dadgummit, a long time ago, before she passed away, Judy Bonds said, you have to stop mountaintop removal here or it will spread. Because she was a visionary. And she recognized that this wasn't just for coal anymore. And she knew it would get loose, and by damn if it hasn't.
go and have a look at what they're doing with the water table in central Wyoming around uranium mining.
I'm somewhat familiar.
Absolutely nuts.
Well, I mean, when you've got plans out there to set fire to coal beds underground so as to capture the gases above ground, we've gone around the bend. And one thing I was going to mention, Roger, a minute ago in regard to the precautionary principle is this. In doing some research on it a while back, are you familiar with the name Cass Sunstein?
Yes.
He is one of the legal geniuses in Barack Obama's inner circle and was at one time mentioned as a possible Supreme Court nominee. Well, Cass Sunstein has authored at least one book or paper or something along those lines in which he argues that the precautionary principle would be an absolute disaster for capitalism.
Exactly. Perfect. Very true.
But the thing is, it wouldn't necessarily be a
disaster. Right.
It wouldn't be a disaster for human beings.
No. It would be a major sunrise on a hope for future human beings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mean those seven generations?
Or so.
Yeah.
I would prefer to figure on seven times seven times seven times seven times seven times seven and on ad nauseum.
Yeah, me too, me too. But the general rubric is that if you can get one generation to think about the next seven, eventually you get to where you're talking about. Because
well,
every generation adds
one. I actually think, Bob, that somehow or other, we're going to get there. I just am this indefatigable optimist. You can't stop it. I just won't stop being hopeful. I just can't. It's just, I guess it's my flaw.
Well, I know I want to, and I give into it. Well, I hate to say give in, but I acknowledge some of that too. I want, you know, we had a discussion on here many, many years ago now about the divergence between our possibilities of going forward to a sort of Star Trek-y future versus going forward to a Mad Max future.
I have anticipated pretty much a Mad Max expectation since about it became clear to me that such a scenario was likely in the mid-70s. And part of why I anticipated that is that I suspected that environmental destruction would be precipitated by acts probably of societal failure on the one hand, or individual acts of taking advantage of the weak spots in our infrastructure, specifically nuclear power plants are a fairly obvious one, forcing mass exodus from urban centers because of the prospect of nothing to eat. And so I have actually anticipated something like a Mad Max scenario and really considered how true that could be for a really long time. It has taken a little bit longer to materialize than I had expected. And meanwhile, my hope regenerates to think that we will figure out a way to cooperate into the future. I just think we will. Right? It's a distressing process, but I think we're going to do it. I just do.
For all our sakes, I hope you're right, Roger. And I'm glad you called in. It's good to hear from you.
It's good to talk with you. Have a good evening.
You too. Take care.
And call out to Angry.
Yes. All right. Thanks.
All right.
I don't know if he's still there or not. All right. Take care, Roger. Bye now.
All right. Bye.
We'll keep it going, and let's run over to line one. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Hey, Todd.
How are you tonight?
I'm getting by, I think. How about you?
I'm hanging. I'm doing my little food court thing and listening. I like what Roger had to say about conscious people having a burden.
It is a burden. It's a burden of proof. It's a moral burden. It's an ethical burden, and all we have to do is figure out a way to convey that burden to people who have no morals and no ethics and no conscience. You know, the CEO class.
You mean like Dick Blanken? What's his name? Blankenship? Remember Dick Dastardly from that cartoon?
Yeah. Him. He would be one. The gubernatorial candidate, Jim Justice, here in West Virginia, would be another coal billionaire.
Yeah. So I have a question, and maybe, it's burning me up. So at what point is the mainstream media just going to tell the truth and say, look at the GOP candidate? I mean, what is this? Is this a joke?
Is that a serious question, Todd? I mean, really?
No, I'm honest to God fucking serious. It's just really upset. I mean, I've been mulling this for three fucking days, all right?
All right.
What in the world's going on? These people are crazy. You have a fucking idiot savant, a pathological liar neurosurgeon who God knows came from who knows where, right? You got Donald Trump who I think he doesn't even know what's going to happen. He doesn't want to be president. Are you kidding? He doesn't want to be president. He just wants to be president because the black dude was president. I'm sorry about
that. No, it's okay. I think it is possible to make a legitimate effort to answer your question. How long before the for-profit media says, look, all these those are all bozos on that bus? When it stops making money. Okay? When it stops making money. When these pageants aren't the ratings bonanzas that they are. When CNN can no longer charge more for an ad during a so-called debate than they can during any other part of their broadcast schedule during the entire ordinary year. That's when they'll stop. We're in a bit of a bubble, you, me, the Horn Family Commune Congregation, Todd. We are. We tend to think rationally, and we think intelligently. Yeah, well, hell, we think.
Mm-hmm.
The other side, though, I mean, there are some people walking down the carnival midway who don't realize they're at a carnival.
Right.
To channel the late great prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, there are people out there who don't realize it's just a ride. And to a certain extent, there is an element of both sides to it. I mean, for instance, what Roger was talking about with the mining in Minnesota, this proposed sulfide mining, copper mining, the so-called Duluth Complex. Guess who will be four square in favor of that? I mean, I'll bet you. I got a dollar to your 10 that says I'm right. Or I got 10 to your 1. Senator Al Franken will think that is just the niftiest thing he's ever heard of.
And why would that be? Yeah.
Because he needs the mining votes of the Minnesota DFL party, the Democrat Farm Labor Party.
Oh.
Which is the Democratic Party of Minnesota.
I got you. He needs their blessing.
Okay. Well, he doesn't want them. He doesn't need any signs about Franken's war on copper mining popping up in people's yards up toward Duluth. or up in the, up around the Mesabi Range.
Well, I think, you know, it seems like every, a lot of things come back to education, because I think, like you said last night, and I believe the same thing, there's a workaround when it comes to the fossil fuels and things that we need. And, you know, there is a way to get, I mean, people still make money, but it's just you can do it in a different way. You know, because, in other words, it's the social economy.
Yeah, you would hope. You would hope.
But, you know, I like that movie Network. Do you remember Network?
Oh, of course.
Now, when is that going to happen?
When what is presently going on. See, Network was set in a time. Network existed in a universe where the news divisions had not been fully monetized and capitalized. In other words, it existed in a time that does not exist. It might as well have been set in the era of dinosaurs. That was, you know, Network was Patty Chayefsky's, you know, scream out the window, you know, on any number of social ills. But that'll happen. Well, I mean, look, we had an artificial one of those when Rick Santelli created the teabagger movement from the floor of the Chicago Board of Trade. Taxed enough already, right? But it was phony baloney. It was ginned up. It was a con. But there was a sufficient plurality of Americans, white, angry, frightened, low information, poorly educated, who went, well, hell yeah, that's why Grandpa joined the John Birch Society. Damn it!
Oh, I'm smothered like a blanket by those folks. I mean, they have the little yellow, what is it, the Gaston flag, license tag.
Yeah, the urine colored snake flag.
Right. Yeah, I like that.
And I mean, Virginia has urine colored snake license plates. Blew my mind the first time I saw one of those. So. I mean, it's profitable. None of this has anything to do with serious policy discussion. I don't have to watch the thing to say that there will be no serious discussion of policy in this pageant tonight. I mean, they'll talk about granny starving, and they'll talk about how Social Security's going broke, and how we got to fix Medicare by eliminating Medicare and tax credits and maybe mumbling Ben Carson the Lion King can we'll just call him Mufasa. Maybe he can talk about his flat tax. I mean, hell's bells. What's next, Todd? What's next? I mean, they're running out of loopy tax proposals. How about everybody gets entered in the lottery? And everybody just has to buy a lottery ticket every day, and that'll be our taxes. At least one poor.
30%. 30% of the people would vote for that because they like lottery tickets.
Well, hell, probably even more would vote for it because, well, you ain't going to have no other taxes, and we might win, Marvelline. And the billionaire class would go, yeah, but I might win too because I'm, yeah.
I want to know who's cooking mumbling Ben's rice. Who's cooking Uncle Ben's rice? That's what I want to know.
Oh.
Somebody's cooking his rice.
Well, that's true. I don't necessarily know who the money is behind mumbling Ben. I mean, we know T-Rump is fronting himself. And we know that Jebya has, you know, $100 million worth of donors. And that's the old line Republican old guard. Sheldon Adelson and the Koch brothers are in the mix somewhere.
Yeah, he looks like good Cato material to me. Yeah, I could see Cato reaching out for him. I could see that. He would love that. I mean, I know these people. One of my exes is actually a Seventh-day Adventist, and that's one of the reasons that I'm not with her right now. And, I mean, that's, you know, I don't knock anybody's religion, but it's just different. But, you know, there's a lot expected of you. It's a lot expected of you if you're a member of that church. And it's a lot. I mean, it's a life. It's more than just like I'm going to church on Sunday. It's a lifestyle. You know, they just hang out with each other and they pretty much stay with themselves. So if you're not comfortable with that, it's not for you. So it wasn't for me.
It's clear to me that Mumbling Ben is nuttier than a Christmas fruitcake. Okay, and I mean no, I mean no disrespect to people who suffer from mental disabilities, but this guy ain't home. I tell you what, if you want the best explanation I've seen of the whole "I got a scholarship to West Point" foolishness is over at Esquire.com on Charlie Pierce's blog. There's a retired Army Lieutenant Colonel named Robert Bateman who just did a lovely job of very, very methodically going through the history of the service academies, how one gets in, how one got in, where they came from. And at the end, he sets out some conclusions that are unescapable. Unavoidable. And, you know, he cuts Mumbling Ben some slack along the way. But the guy is the guy is really honest and for true, no kidding, a liar. But there's a pathology that attaches to people like Mumbling Ben because he thinks it's okay to be a liar as long as he's lying for Jesus.
Yes. Yeah, it's apparent to me that he has some type of delusion. He's living in his own delusion. Because he continues, how could you know if you understand what vetting means, that he's supposed to be an intelligent person, he's a nervous person, idiot savant. That's all I can say. But so anyway, does he not know what vetting means? Like, they're going to look. They're going to see how many turds he cut in elementary school on the 5th day of May. You know, I mean, he's supposed to be president. Does he not get that?
Maybe not. I mean, remember, Todd, I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican. They get breaks that normal people, sane people, don't get.
Oh, so you're going back to who's cooking is right. Okay. Right.
Well, I'm going back to there is a separate set of rules for Republicans. The things that Bernie Sanders, I mean, Jesus, they're still making it sound like he honeymooned at the linen suite in the Hotel Moscow. When that whole thing is just a giant lie.
You know what? Speaking of giant lie, since you brought that phrase up, I'm not feeling good. I usually get excited. I've never missed a presidential vote since I was young. But you know, now I see this is a perversion of us being American. I mean, if people in the country television's off people and do research and seek out information. Choose, in other words, don't be spoon-fed. Choose what you want to see. But choose diversity. Otherwise, it's easy now to get caught up in their own thing. And it's easy to do. In other words, you should get things that agree with the opinion you want. Like I have to force myself to listen to watch Fox News only because I need to know what they're doing. And, you know, I'm like, okay, well, that was reasonable what this person said. But then they come with this, just the crazy stuff. But, you know, you have to be primary sources. Here we go. You have to do your research. But But we should all be ashamed of what's going on right now. This is really a travesty of what Americans have worked so hard in terms of keeping this democracy together. And as some folks have said, you know, maybe it wasn't meant to stay together because this, as you have said, and other folks have said, the Civil War really never went away. And we've got this cold Civil War going on right now. And it's painfully evident in the House and the Congress. And it's also in the military, which a lot of people won't talk about, but it's really bright. That's one of the reasons we have this really scatterbrained policy in the Middle East, is that you've got to remember, that was a good job for a lot of people in the military. They came from, you know, little podunk towns in the South, and that was a good gig. I'm in the military, you know, they just tell you whatever, keep going up through the ranks. But they're still racist bastards. And then he had this guy who appears to be black as president, and they don't like that. And he's not going to tell me what to do. And, I'm not doing that. And you see how many generals that we've been going through, right? Traitors, he's a traitor. But that's a whole other conversation. But I just say this to you. I don't want to say no more. I know. But yeah, it's a mess. But that's part of the bigger problem right now. This thing is falling apart. These are legitimate clowns. These are legitimate clowns running for president for the GOP. This is ridiculous. But see, we're all numb. I guess I'm numb too.
I'm not numb. I just know. Todd, you only get they're not. Well, they are. You said they're legitimate, and I want to reinforce that. They are legitimate. They are legitimate to the extent that there is a plurality of people in this country who think that they represent a direction that they would like to see this country taken in. There are lots of people out there. Many of them, of course, are old and white, and they're drawing Social Security and Medicare, and they think it would be great if we could make sure Social Security goes away and Medicare goes away just as soon as they're done with it. I mean, I'm getting a little bit uppity about my generation. Because
they don't really think that, do they?
Sure they do. Sure they do.
That's awful.
Well, that generation sat idly by while Ronnie and Tip took off their jackets and rolled up their shirt sleeves and said, "Who can we screw?" And they both agreed that they couldn't screw the people who were drawing Social Security then or would in the immediate future. So they went, "Hey, those guys down there, the ones that are 23, 25 years old, let's nail them to the wall. They're not even paying attention." And the Democrats and the Republicans went, "That's a great idea."
I just had one thing about Social Security that really irritates me, and I was late on this. I didn't learn this until maybe 5 years ago. About there should never be a cap on Social Security. I don't think a lot of people understand it. After I think it's around $117,000 to $119,000 or $120,000 for a couple right now. So after you earn that much money, you don't pay into Social Security.
No, you don't. No, you don't. But there's a problem. I know a lot.
What kind of shit is that?
A lot of people, Todd, say, "Well, hell, just lift the cap." Well, the cap is the cap is a contribution cap, but it's also an earnings cap. It's the most that you're going to be paid based on earnings. Okay. So if you raise the cap, you're going to have to raise the max payout too. That's not to say we shouldn't lift the cap. But I want to go back to a different place, and that is this.
Well,
that is this. The only person I have ever heard talking meaningfully about righting wrongs inside Social Security and Medicare is Bernie Sanders. I want the option. My generation, I want the option to be given back to us of 62 or 65. Because we're just as American as anybody else who draws it at 62 and 65. But that was the essential determination that was made back when, you know, we weren't paying attention. Those 20-somethings, they're not as American as we are. Gipper. No, Tip, they're... Well, Tip, no, they're not. Let's fuck them.
Yep.
I mean, we talk about the younger generation that has crippling debt and no future, no hope for any kind of jobs like their great grandparents by now had. And we talk about the present generation that's drawing. And I'm not trying to create class envy here or demographic envy, but nobody's saying, "Hey, why don't we give back what we took away?" To those at the end of the boomer generation and the front of the next one. Because that does just happen to be, the same generation whose white males between the ages of 45 and 54 are drug overdosing and committing suicide at an alarming rate.
Yeah, I remember you talking about that last night, and I think they don't have a problem with that. It's like benign neglect. I'm really beginning to believe that they don't care.
Yeah. Question. Statement coming here from Mike. He says, "Here's the solution to Republican. Republicans should question the Republican candidates in the Republican debate. Let's make the questioners for Ben Carson, Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Carly Fiorina, Rand Paul, John Kasich, and Jeb Bush to be Rick Santorum, Bobby Jindal, Chris Christie, and Mike Huckabee. And let's bring back in George Pataki and Lindsey Graham with an earphone linked to John McCain." Now that would be Republicans asking Republicans questions. Nice. Yeah.
I just want to say hello to Carol Baker. She's listening, and everyone from Georgia, your input, Carol. And I know that Bob does. And we just have to, you know, keep on keeping on, as they say, and do what you have to do. And those of you who can do a recurring contribution, please go to the PayPal MasterCard user and select. Every month, during, every little bit helps. Bob, talk to you soon.
All right, take care, Todd. Thanks so much, man. Good talking to you this evening.
You too.
Bye now. Our buddy Todd calling from South Carolina, Stan. here's a lovely little piece of as we talk about issues of wages and equality, inequality, fairness, whatever. Of course, this comes from a Fox affiliate, WJBK in Detroit, where people who work in fast food restaurants are asking for $15 an hour, which, of course, is the modern equivalent of the minimum wage back in, like, say, when I was born. You're going to, well, chomp down real good on the hockey puck for this one, okay? Think you'll be glad.
I want my $15.
Trending right now, fast food workers all over the country rally again, demanding $15 an hour. This is the protest outside of McDonald's in Chicago's Bucktown neighborhood. But those protesters are not alone. Right here in Metro Detroit, fast food workers held their own rally.
But instead of staying put at McDonald's, this group took their fight straight to local politicians. Fox 2's Rup Raj with more.
Notice how if it's working people wanting a wage, it's a fight, right? Language matters.
It wasn't the Golden Arches or the hotspot for lunch that these workers chose as their landing point for protest this morning. It was City Hall in Southfield for one simple reason. It's election season.
When we cry out for elected officials to stand with us, here you have the city of Southfield Mayor, Mayor Sivers, standing with us saying, you all deserve $15 an hour and a union. And this is why we're here today. And we're going all over to let officials know, elected officials know, that if you do not stand with the 54,000 fast food workers, that we're not going to stand with you at the polls.
If they wanted elected officials to hear them, they got their point across. The mayor-elect of Southfield joining them on the front stoop of City Hall to show his support.
Because you can't live on the current minimum wage. How can you support a family? I was a longtime school administrator, and I had parents who were working two jobs. It impacts the whole family just to make ends meet.
Workers across the nation walked away from the morning drive-through lines to join an informal picket line instead. Their beef? They don't get paid enough. They want $15 an hour. The minimum wage in Michigan is going up in phases after lawmakers decided to boost it. Right now, it's at $8.15 an hour. By the year 2018, it'll rise to $9.25.
Don't spend it all in one place. Golly, by 2018, it'll be $9.25. That's about, you know, maybe two-thirds of what the minimum wage was. Again, you know, 1960s. You see, we've never gotten around to saying that things like cost of living adjustments should be applied to the minimum wage. No. But we haven't gotten to the good part.
These workers want $15 an hour and union rights, and they want it now.
Because we need $15 in the union because we can't live off minimum wage. It's just not possible.
So for those people who don't understand how tough your job is, describe a day at your job. What's the hardest part?
A day at my job is me doing everything from running the drive-thru to washing dishes to prepping food. So it's just like, it's just a lot of work just for one person to do, and I work the night shift.
The protest started before the sun came up at this McDonald's off of Greenfield in Plymouth in Detroit. The 80 workers were as fired up as they were soaked. The rain didn't wash away their message, heard loud and clear.
Some people say that paramedics don't even make $15 an hour, and they save lives, so why should fast food workers get that?
Oh, the Fox style book strikes again. Some people say. Who? Intrepid Fox reporter? Who? Is it you who say? But you notice the BS dichotomy there, right? Well, I mean, paramedics save lives and you just make hamburgers. I mean, come on, in a way you're worth $15 an hour. You know what? I'd like for paramedics to make $20 an hour. Does that Fox clown expect her to say, oh, well, okay, since you put it that way, we'll be, I tell you what, why don't you cut our pay? Damn. No end of it, is there? Well, not as long as there's a Fox, there's not. Yeah, I told you that had some hockey puck goodness to it. Irish Dave with a question. Why is it when we raise the contribution cap, why do we have to raise the benefit cap? Seems like that wouldn't introduce a little of the progressivism that the current Social Security system lacks. Am I wrong? No, I don't think you are, Dave. But by the same token, the whole operative idea behind Social Security was that it was going to be a program for everybody. I mean, it didn't start out that way, but that as long as everybody is buying into it and everybody is drawing out of it with some degree of fairness and equality based on contributions, then it would be safer than if it was just something that was delineated a poor program or a working class program. Because remember, the Social Security Act passed without a single Republican vote. You know, just like the Affordable Care Act. So if everybody's invested, everybody's in. Yeah. About 7 minutes before the hour, probably time left for, maybe one more call. And a reminder, we are $40 away from being done with fundraising this evening. Just $40. Thank you very kindly to everyone who has gotten us there. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening. How you doing?
What's happening, Jim?
Oh, just a comment about what happened in the 80s with Ronnie and Tip O'Neill. You know, the whole model for this thing is to transition and to diminish benefits for people was started with a federal worker.
You're absolutely right.
83, 84, they transitioned from civil service retirement system to the FERS, or FERS, in which they could put their money into what came out as KEOs and stuff like this. And, of course, they said, well, this works so well, we can just put the other programs down the road into Wall Street and money.
And everybody will be on the roulette wheel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a chicken in every pot and two cars in every garage. That was the thing.
And Wall Street in every pocket.
Right, exactly. That's when it went from Main Street to Wall Street. But it started with the federal retirement system back in 83, 84. And I saw it happen, and people were given the option of taking one or the other. And I said, are you crazy? And so that was a bad, bad day.
Well, so could you stay with the old system?
Yeah.
And did you?
Yeah.
Because.
Had to. I mean, you know, are you crazy? You could, as a matter of fact, that made it so attractive that you could contribute up to 10% into FERS. So there it is, and there you have it. And that's how it started. And now they're going into what they want to do is to privatize Social Security and to, well, if they can't make any money out of it or whatever. They're going to try to do away with it. And, you know, it's one of those bugbears they've always had since 1935. As you said, they none ever voted for it. They never wanted it, and they still don't want it because they want that money. And that's the sad thing about it. It really is.
And they do not give up very easily.
And I don't think that there's much of a chance right now of any recovery from those actions, because it looks like things are just going in the exact opposite way. Hell, they want to take everything they possibly can. I mean, look at federal annuitants who were on the old system. They're dying out. So they're not after them too much.
No. Like I've said before, they're never going to say, you know what we need to do? We need to go after people who are drawing benefits right now. That's why it was easy to reach two generations down to my generation in the 1980s and say, they're not even paying attention.
What is it now, 72?
67 for me, I think.
67, and that's diminished returns on your monthly annuity, or if you go to 72, you get a little more. Is that the way they want it?
Hey, I'm not sure. I'm not exactly sure. All I remember was the day my dad looked at me and went, wow, they screwed you.
Yeah.
We'll take 62 and we'll push it to 67, and we'll take 65 and push it to 70.
Right. And this chain CPI thing they have is absolutely absurd.
Oh, it's madness.
You know, based on the price of gasoline and stuff like this. Well, I've said all this before, so I'm not going to repeat myself, and you're running out of time, and you probably have some things you want to talk about. But, well, tomorrow is Veterans Day, and I don't know if you mentioned it before, because I was taping the Fox Business News, I haven't seen it yet, of the Republican debate.
Did they have the kiddie table debate already?
I don't know. As a matter of fact, I've got it on hold right now, and so.
Well, it fires up in about 2 minutes.
In 2 minutes they start at 7.
No. But the grown up debate.
Oh, it starts right now.
Yeah.
Well, I've got the kiddie table on right now with Sondra Smith and Gerald Feist or whatever are in Trish Reagan, I can imagine what they're going to have to say. But, you know, like you said, it's just like some very bad taste beauty pageant or ugly pageant. And that's exactly what this whole thing is to me, an ugly pageant.
If John Waters was in charge of the Republican debates, this is it.
Yeah, that'd be a great thing for John, but nonetheless, well, there it is, and there you have it. So,
all right, Jim, you have a good night. Take care.
Bye.
Bye now. It is, less than 2 minutes before. Ooh, 30 seconds to go. Hey, we got to get out of here. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for helping dig us out of the hole. Who knows? That other $40 may show up between now and airtime tomorrow, which would be awesome. Y'all take care. Thanks, everybody. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all. Don't put the hockey pucks down. There's a pageant coming on.